And that wraps it up for another episode of Flashpoints. Our executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Senior producers are Miguel Gavilan Molina and Kevin Pina. Technical director is Mike Biggs. For previous episodes, go to kpfa.org or flashpoints.net. For questions or comments, email dennis@kpfa.org. Thank you for listening.
You are tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio.
KBOO's End of Your Drive is almost over. We invite you to become a member right now by going to kboo.fm/give or by texting KBOO to 44321. Contribute during this last week of 2021, and your donation will be matched dollar for dollar up to $8,000, thanks to the generous support of a group of anonymous donors. Hurry and join the KBOO family today, and help us meet our $45,000 goal at kboo.fm/give. Together we can do it, and thanks for your support.
Times Like Now is an interview series. Interviews with interesting people who are doing cool stuff. And you can listen to past episodes wherever you get your podcasts. Please like and subscribe. The prison system does very little to actually reform inmates. And my guest today, James Fox, brought yoga into the federal penitentiary and has shown that through meditation and yoga practice, people can reform from past lives of crime on this episode of Times Like Now. Hello, James Fox. Thank you so much for joining me here on the program today.
Nice to be with you, Trevor.
Now, you are founding director of prisonyoga.org. First question for you is, the standard prison system that you walked into, what is your opinion of that federal penitentiary system as far as actually reforming prisoners, or where is it at, and what brought you to this, to be a part of this and to bring yoga into the federal pen system?
Yeah, thank you for that. Thank you for that question. Let me just clarify that the prison systems in the United States are federal, state, and county jails. And then there are also private detention centers, but the largest of those are the county jails across the United States that hold prisoners. And then the second largest of that would be the state prisons. And federal prisons would actually be the smallest of those three. But we have approximately 2.25 million people who are incarcerated in the United States. That's adults. That doesn't include youth. And the recidivism rate, meaning the return to prison of somebody who's been released within 3 years, is about 65%. So in essence, we have a broken system. We have a broken prison system in terms of rehabilitating people and in terms of providing the services for those people who are incarcerated to turn their lives around and to also help to assure that they won't reoffend once that they're out, because that 65% recidivism rate means that 65% of the people who are released reoffend within 3 years.
Right. So clearly something is, as you said, something is broken there. And you, when did you begin prisonyoga.org? And how did you get into the prison system to come in and say, I want to teach yoga to these inmates? What was the reaction? And when did you start this, I guess, is my first question.
So it's called the Prison Yoga Project, and you're correct. The website is prisonyoga.org. I became a yoga teacher in 2000 after practicing yoga for many years. And I first started working with at-risk youth, introducing yoga to young men who were either in residential treatment facilities or in juvenile halls in the San Francisco Bay Area. And then in 2002, I was invited to bring the yoga program into San Quentin Prison with a major restorative justice organization that was establishing an innovative rehabilitation program for prisoners. And they wanted an embodiment component to the cognitive behavioral curriculum that they were offering. So when I first went in, which was almost 19 years ago now, San Quentin hadn't had a yoga program in the past. And so it was brand new. And I certainly wasn't received with open arms by prison staff. And the incarcerated people who were in the facility were a bit leery of what is this all about? Some guy coming in here with a yoga mat under his arm. And this has to do with essentially the public face of yoga, and that people who haven't been exposed to yoga think of yoga as a practice that's done in a nice yoga studio, primarily by young white women, with candles and incense. And of course, my approach was completely different, in that I was going in with the idea of providing a therapeutic approach to deal with the issues that incarcerated people were dealing with. And a lot of this had to do with my own background and my own experience from practicing yoga and the benefits that I experienced from practicing yoga.
Right. That is decrease in depression, reduce stress, and other things. Clearly, this has been going on for some time, and I'm glad to see this is in the prison system. It seems like that would be a very positive thing for the stresses that people experience in prison, the PTSD that people experience in prison. What has been some of the results after so many years of this project? What has been your rates, your numbers, and recidivism?
Well, we really can't measure recidivism. Recidivism would mean that we would have access to prisoners' files, what are called C files. And there are no prisons that we know that allow us access to their C files. What we know anecdotally from the people who take our program, which, by the way, is voluntary. Anybody who takes our program in a prison setting does so of their own accord. We have programs in 20 states. We have over 120 programs throughout the United States. And we also have programs in Mexico, in Canada, and also in parts of Europe. So, and I will say that the program has spread organically. What started out at San Quentin spread organically. Some of it had to do with the fact that in 2009, I wrote a book for prisoners called Yoga, A Path for Healing and Recovery. And when I published the book, I made it available free of charge to any prisoner who writes to us and asks for a copy. So we started sending the book out in 2010, and we've sent more than 35,000 copies of that book to prisoners throughout the U.S. And it's now been translated into Spanish, and we're in the process of translating it into French. And I think that planted a seed in a lot of correctional facilities. I had no idea how popular yoga would be in prisons, but I found out pretty quickly that there was a significant interest in yoga. And so to answer your question about, so what we've seen in terms of recidivism, we've only seen when we're able to stay in touch with people once they're out. But from studies that have been done on our program, we see the reports of a calmer temperament, emotional control, anger management, relief of chronic physical pain. And these are all issues that are related to incarcerated people's lifestyles, and particularly their early in life experiences, which is directly related to trauma. So the field of trauma and the understanding of symptoms of trauma have come to the fore in the last 10 to 15 years, particularly as a result of a psychiatrist named Bessel van der Kolk, who wrote a book called The Body Keeps the Score, which has been on the New York Times bestseller list, and a psychologist by the name of Peter Levine, who's written a number of books. One of my favorite is Waking the Tiger, Healing Trauma. And I think a lot of the focus on trauma originally came as a result of military veterans coming back from active duty and having really difficult time reintegrating to society. And so there was a recognition, you used the term PTSD, there was a recognition that so many of our military veterans who returned from active duty have got PTSD. They also have traumatic brain injury, and they also have all kinds of other issues of trauma. Well, one of the things that we've experienced, and not to compare military veterans with prisoners, but the brain doesn't distinguish between I was a military veteran and I was in combat in Iran, or I was running the streets in Los Angeles or Chicago or New York or Baltimore, and I was involved in gang activity. The brain only registers symptoms of trauma. And particularly if you compound that with people who come from backgrounds of trauma, what's called developmental trauma or childhood trauma. And so what you have in the incarcerated population is you have a concentration of people who have these issues and have these symptoms. And, you know, looking at the vast inequities of society today, and particularly the focus on social justice issues, when you look at the inequities of income, when you look at the racial inequities in this country, you find a concentration of those in the prison population. African Americans are 13% of the U.S. population, but they are 40% of the incarcerated population in this country.
I wanted to ask, how did the inmates react to you coming in there with a yoga mat under your arm? And Real quickly, an average class size, how many? And initially, your first time in, were you ever intimidated or afraid of any of these guys?
Okay, so there are three questions there. The average size of a class depends on the size of the room right now. So at San Quentin, the average size of a class is about 15 participants, and we run four different classes a week. So roughly 60 people a week go through our program. When I first went in with a yoga mat under my arm, I was met with whistles and catcalls. Who's this sweet guy coming in here, and what's this all about? But within a fairly short period of time, word got out. Everything in prison spreads by word of mouth among the prisoners. And word got out, hey, this is no joke. What I say is the five guys who came to my first yoga class were the five bravest prisoners at San Quentin. But the word got out, such as, I just had the best night's sleep I've had in years as a result of going to the yoga class, or my lower back pain was relieved as a result of going to the yoga class for the last 2 weeks. I feel less stressed. I feel less anxious as a result of being involved in the yoga class. And so within a fairly quick period of time, I would say 6 months, I had full classes. Have I been intimidated? There have been a couple of times. There have been a couple of times. I mean, very, very rarely. I feel that by and large, I'm very much respected for the way that I carry myself and the way that I'm able to relate to the people that I teach. But of course, in prison, anything can happen. And it's not that somebody from the outside, like myself, coming in would ever be in danger of physical harm unless I disrespected somebody openly or did something egregious to somebody. The kind of violence that happens in prison is pretty much prisoner on prisoner or staff on prisoner, mostly prisoner on prisoner. But there were a couple of times. I mean, one of the issues that you deal with in this population that is experiencing so much trauma and chaos is mental health issues. That's another issue. Our jails and prisons are the largest mental health institutions in the United States. So there are a lot of people in prison who've got mental health issues. And the times that I did have issues, there were mental health issues involved with the person. And I was able to de-escalate the situation. I was frightened to begin with, but I had to put that aside and deal with what I had to deal with. Now, my training was to blow a whistle and to call prison staff in. However, I realized that if I did that, I'd have an empty yoga class going forward. So I was challenged to deal with the situation that was being presented to me, that I was threatened by somebody in the moment. And I had to deal with it, and I had to deal with de-escalation. Now, fortunately, I'm also trained in violence prevention facilitation, which is some other work that I've done with prisoners. And as a result of being involved in this restorative justice organization before I started the Prison Yoga Project as a standalone entity, I was also doing work in violence prevention and also something called victim offender education. So I had some tools from that, as well as from my own background. I grew up in Chicago. I was exposed to a lot of things in an urban environment, so I was able to use some of those skills.
Just as you were explaining that, I question, are the faculty or the staff or the other guards, are they allowed to take your classes? Because it might benefit that system greatly as well.
Oh, you're singing my tune, Trevor. No, we haven't. Well, we have been able to do that in just a couple of different places across the country. We haven't been able to do it in California, in any of the California jails or prisons. And of course, that would, just as you were mentioning, it would accomplish two things. One, it would accomplish for those naysayers of, what are we providing yoga for these cons, which is something that I've heard from prison staff. They would get an experience of what it is that we were really doing. Rather than, again, if they have never done yoga and they don't have any experience with yoga, they think of it as a, you know, from a photograph or an ad of a yoga studio, rather than the real life practice that we're bringing. The other thing, the second thing that it would do for prison staff, which I think you mentioned, is to deal with a lot of their stress and anxiety, which is extremely high. You know, there have been all kinds of studies on prison guards, the level of their stress and anxiety, the level of their addiction issues, the level of their, you know, serious health issues, because they're having to deal with stress and trauma, vicarious trauma, which is trauma that they pick up from the environment that they're working in or from other people. They're dealing with it all the time. So that's, at some point in time, we may be able to do that. We're not a super large organization. We have teachers, we have yoga teachers throughout the country who essentially volunteer with us to teach in the facilities where we offer programs. And so our first mission is to bring the practice to incarcerated people. And hopefully at some point in time, we're going to be able to bring it to staff. We have had the experience of doing that in Maryland. We had the experience of doing that in Massachusetts. And we had the experience of doing that in Alabama with very good results.
That's very exciting. And I hope that continues. That would be a beneficial thing. And that would be fantastic if that would move through the system to other states, counties. Speaking of which, how many instructors do you have in this program?
I wish my program director was was on our meeting. She'd be able to answer that pretty quickly. I would say, you know, roughly 150 throughout the U.S. I know we have another 12 to 15 in Mexico. And then in the various countries, we have programs in Sweden. We have a program in the Netherlands, Holland. We are starting a program in the United Kingdom. And we may be starting a program in France. That depends on whether I'm going to be able to go to France in September. But in the U.S., I would say we have about 150 active teachers who, well, pre-COVID, were delivering in-prison classes. Now, we're still not able to go into most facilities, although I've actually started going back into San Quentin. I've been going back into San Quentin since the month of June and resuming programming there. But it's the only facility in California where we've been able to resume programs. And other than, I think, Massachusetts and maybe a couple of other states, we haven't been able to resume programs yet in the U.S.
Has there been any instances, or could there be, where inmates would become instructors and lead these on their own?
That's another great question, Trevor. And it probably, I would say, in terms of priorities, it's alongside being able to provide the program for staff, and that is to train long-term prisoners. So it would need to be prisoners who were long-term prisoners, life sentence prisoners, or life sentence prisoners with the possibility of parole, for instance, who were going to be in a facility for a long period of time, to train them to conduct classes where they were allowed to do that. It's not common that prisons allow prisoners to conduct their own classes. It happens. There are places where it can be done. And of course, staff would need to be present when they did that, which, by the way, I think you had asked me that question. In California, it's not required for staff to be in the room with us when we're conducting the class, which is of benefit because it would change the environment. It would change the ambiance of the class if a correctional officer were in the class with us. I think there's much more freedom of movement and of expression without that being there. But that is definitely something that we want to do, and we've sketched out a plan for that. We would call it a yoga leadership, a peer-to-peer facilitation program. We have been able to actually conduct some yoga teacher certification trainings that adhere to the Yoga Alliance requirements to become certified as a yoga teacher. Those are 200-hour trainings. We have been able to do a couple of those. And at one facility in California, a colleague of mine, not the Prison Yoga Project, but a colleague of mine has done that. And now we're adding on to it a trauma-informed component. And these are long-term prisoners who've become certified as yoga teachers who will at some point in time be able to teach in this facility.
I see. James Fox, what is the website where people could learn more and read into this and maybe even volunteer down the road? Where would people go?
You'd go to www.prisonyoga.org.
That seems straightforward enough. You have other programs besides yoga. You do some book exchange, right? Is that something I saw on the site?
Yeah, we're doing some book exchange. We have a community site on our website, which is engaging community members who sign up as memberships. We're also doing a lot of social justice education on the site because we have, so as I had mentioned, we just have so much contact in the domain. It's like we're in the trenches of the social justice movement, where we have this, concentration of people who are coming from these extreme inequities. And of course, anybody who does any kind of research on the criminal justice system and the prison system understands how much need there is for reform.
Absolutely. James Fox, it's been fantastic speaking with you. I've learned a lot, and I'm going to be looking at the website, and wanted to thank my friend Gibran McDonald, one of your instructors, who helped me meet you and helped put this interview together. He's an old friend of mine and a great fella as well, and one of your teachers. James Fox, thank you so much. Yoga, I think it's a great thing, and you're doing a great job with it. Prisonyoga.org.
Thank you, Trevor.
Past episodes of Times Like Now can be found wherever you get your podcasts. Please do like and subscribe. My name is Trevor Collins, and I can be reached, Trevor@timeslikenow.com. A big thank you to the letter J, Cody Robertson, for original theme music. Thank you for tuning into the program today. It's a weekly program, and I do look forward to speaking with you next time.
The following program is a special encore rebroadcast for these unique pandemic times. Dates, times, and events mentioned in the following program have already occurred and are no longer relevant.
Hi, it's Joseph with Art Focus on KBOO. Don't forget, we're in the middle of our end of the year drive, so please show your support by becoming a member today at kboo.fm/give. Thanks.
Andy Wawa looks a scream. mama's dream. Can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Mary Weaver Chapin. She's the curator of prints and drawings at the Portland Art Museum, and she's here on Zoom talking about private lives, home and family in the arts of the Nabi, 1889 to 1900. And it's running now through January 23rd. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus again, Mary.
Oh, you're welcome, Joseph. It's really great to be here with you, and I've missed our chats during COVID.
So, Mary, why were they called the Nabi, N-A-B-I?
The Nabi was a nickname that they adopted for themselves. It comes from the Hebrew word for prophet, and they wanted to be prophets of a new art. They were rebelling against Impressionism. They were rebelling against academic art. And they saw themselves as sort of a band of brothers who could take this next step into symbolism and whatever comes next. So although they never exhibited under this title, they are known today by this group name.
This is an amazing show, 150 pieces, a lot of lithographs, drawings, paintings. It's nearly all 2D work, and it's by four artists from Paris in the, you know, 1890s. And there are four photos of the guys. They were buddies, they worked together, they were in and out of each other's houses, you know, they all had kids together. And the four photos, you know, they look like, to me, they're like John Paul, George, and Ringo. Each one had a little different personality. So just tell us in a thumbnail scale.